White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 626.
This is Sonny Smith, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick!
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. Man, my voice is kind of rough tonight. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our super, super important and beloved Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, fighting the pollen as usual, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer, also fighting the pollen.
Yeah, it's quite a fight. Sand with bad intentions is what I believe Coach Snyder called it a couple of weeks ago. I meant to add a new sound clip tonight. I added several new ones, but I just realized I forgot one. I was going to get from Babylon 5, Jakar going, "What are you going to do?" Because I thought that might be fun, you know. I look for phrases where they could be useful, you know what I mean? But I'll try to
fit them into regular conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, gosh, that's the thing about the Kingdom of Heaven was that it's so handy is that they so easily fit into conversation, you know.
But do they?
I can certainly make them fit into conversation, that's for sure. So how are you doing? What's up?
I'm doing okay. It's, beautiful spring weather here. Been outside doing some stuff and enjoying the off season. Good to get away from it a little bit, but a lot going on right now.
There's a lot
going
on. We got several things to talk about tonight. I was out yesterday all morning and half the afternoon planting a new tree. So we now got three trees that I have planted in our yard instead of two. So that was quite... It's a lot more complicated to plant a tree than I ever would have guessed. You think you just dig a hole and stick the tree in it, put the dirt back in. Oh, my friend, no. It's not simple as that. But the first two came out well, so I clearly must have done something right. So I did it again. So
I hope it thrives.
My goal is that I'll be dead before it falls over and smashes our house. That's my plan. Right now,
that's smaller a good plan.
It's smaller than Mira right now, but I'm sure that the day will come that I'm like, why did I do this? You know, as I get the chainsaw out. Well, we do have quite a few things, and I think that probably first up is we got a really big basketball signee in more ways than one, and are still hoping for another really big one, in addition to the really big one we got about 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It is crazy, and we're just – it's insane, you know, how quickly our expectations change, right?
It's all unbelievable.
All these players would have been the highest-rated recruit ever for Auburn, and it would have been dancing for weeks, and now we're like, oh, yeah, there's another one. It's all good.
I guess it's what Alabama fans and Georgia fans feel like in football these days. We get to feel it in basketball. So at least we get to feel it, you know, and that's awesome.
It's true.
But yeah, I mean,
we're a little bit spoiled on the basketball front.
I'll take it. After all those years in the wilderness, man, we have come to the promised land. Speaking of which, before we talk more about our recruits, we do have to talk about the promised land. Literally.
They're going to the promised land.
This was so funny. So a little while ago, my wife is reading something on her phone, and she goes, oh, did you know the basketball team is going somewhere this summer? And I said, no, I hadn't heard that. And she says, well, where do you think they're going to go? And I said, knowing Bruce, Jerusalem. And she says, yes. And I'm like, seriously? She's like, yes. So he'll have them all over there having a good time, I'm sure, learning, you know, both a historical... you know, lessons and religious lessons, you know, Bible lessons, and playing some basketball, because I believe those are the three things that God commanded us to do in the Old Testament is learn your history, study your Bible, and play some basketball. I'm pretty sure that's in, like, Deuteronomy, isn't it?
Eye for an eye, man-to-man defense. Is
that what it is? But you have to be careful where you eat, because...
I cannot eat. I am finicky about company.
You get that a lot over there in the Promised Land. You get that I'm finicky stuff from the Templars. Avoid the Templars, John. You want to play? They're going to play the Israeli national team. They're going to play the Israeli under 20 national team. But I don't think they should play the Templars. The Templars cheat.
I think that's a good lesson.
Yeah, they got those all white uniforms with the red cross on the chest and the number, and they cheat like son of guns, you know. But and besides, you know, when you play there with the rules,
but here there are no civilized rules. So I have business in the East.
Yeah, you can't. They have no civilized rules. You just, you know, so.
What did I say about the Kingdom of Heaven tweets in regular conversation? Vane's like, I'm going to prove him wrong in the first 5 minutes of the show.
Oh, it's so simple. That's right. So, all right. So the basketball team's going to Israel. That'll be cool. They always have a good – he always takes them to cool places, yeah. And they learn stuff and all. But we got Johnny Broome. All right. We had just gotten it's ridiculous.
Johan Traoré.
Wow. How could I have ever forgotten that name? My gosh. So Johan and Johnny Broome, they're both big guys, right? I mean, these aren't These aren't like point guards. These are big dudes down in the front court.
Johan Traoré is a power forward primarily, so he'll be, you know, think of him as the Jabari Smith replacement.
Okay.
And this guy's name is spelled like Johnny Broome, but it's really Jani Broome.
Okay.
So he, think of him as the Kessler replacement. He is a, you know, small school, non-power five, basically center, who was third in the country in blocks last year behind Kessler and one other guy.
Western Kentucky guy, I believe.
Yep. But also a, you know, he's been in college 2 years, still has 3 years to play with his COVID year. A good shot blocker, more of a traditional post player than Auburn has had recently. A guy that is comfortable getting the ball down near the basket with his back to the basket and making something happen, and a pretty efficient score. I mean, in more than half their game, scored 15 points, scored 20 points 10 times. In the conference tournament championship game, scored 32 points. So he's a guy who is a really good defensive player and will enable Auburn to play the same kind of aggressive man-to-man defense we played last year, where we had Kessler backing the guys up, and you had the shot blocker back there, so you could really get in your guy's face and not worry if he went by you.
Take more chances.
He can do that same thing, allow you to take more chances on defense, but he gives a different look on offense. Kessler was more of a face the basket kind of offensive player, and this guy can do some of that. He can take a little jump shot, or he could do the kind of the pick and roll thing and be the guy who rolls to the basket and stuff like Kessler did, but more of an old school back to the basket offensive moves guy. In some ways, similar to some of the stuff that Austin Wiley brought to the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he and Traoré both have that kind of capability to be more of a traditional around the basket scorers. And I think that's a good thing. I think we kind of missed that in our offense last year. We had too many, you know, everybody facing the basket things. And sometimes if you have one guy in there who can draw the defense in a little bit, it opens things up around the basket.
Yeah.
And so I think he's, you know, he's a good player. He can get up and down the court and make plays and, you know, but also I think he can add a scoring element that we could really use. And I think he'll fit in well. I think he's seems like a good player and a good guy. And then, you know, as you said, we have one scholarship left. Julian Phillips is still out there. He's another five-star guy. He's more of a small forward. It was originally committed to LSU, and I think he's down to Auburn and a couple other schools for him. Again, Tennessee's probably the primary, I think, for him. We got Flanagan back, but he was not 100% last year. We hope he's going to be back closer to 100%, but there's no guarantees there.
No.
But, you know, we've lost Cambridge, so he was the primary backup to Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
We do have an assignee, Chance Westry, who I think sometimes gets lost in all the excitement. He's like a, you know, like a 6'5 guy who could back up this year at shooting guard and small forward. So I think he can provide some leaf there too. But Phillips is a guy with a super high upside who's, you know, could really, with the ball in his hands, could really attack the basket and make stuff happen. And just kind of do everything well, be a good perimeter defender, a good ball handler. So, but Broome is a huge signing. It really, you know, I think kind of solidifies to a large degree what the lineup's going to look like. You know, I think it's going to be, you know, the same guards as last year. You know, we're adding a new signee at point guard to back him up just in case we need depth, but I don't think he's going to play a ton. And then Flanagan at small forward, Broom at center, and Trahor at power forward, along with Jalen Williams, I think, would be the other guy. So I think it'll be Jalen Williams, Trahor, and Broom kind of point, rotating among the three spots, and then Cardwell coming in for a few minutes, a half, to give some energy and boost. So.
And that's not a bad thing. I mean, he has his moments, you know. He's not a bad player.
That's right. He's effective, but in small doses.
There's been years that we would have played him 35 minutes a game and been thankful we had him in past Auburn teams.
We'd have been force-feeding him the ball at some teams.
Yeah, he would have been the man. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, we've just been reading about that and studying all that, putting the book together. So, by the way, that reminds me, I was going to ask you this off the air, but I don't know why I shouldn't ask you off now. When do you think we ought to roll the book out? I guess we're going to try to get it out an early edition to the patrons, and then a little bit later on, put it out in the bookstores and Amazon and everything. You have any thoughts on that that you would share? You can be very vague since we're on the air, if you want to.
Okay, I'll be vague on the air. I think, again, for the general population, I think we should target kind of the start of basketball season. Okay. In my mind, but I think for the Patriots, we can have it this summer. I think we can definitely have it this summer. So.
Good deal. Yeah, I just finished grading all my papers just about this afternoon. I got a few stragglers coming in, and then I'm going to be grading final exams in about a week, and then it's going to be a summer of working on the basketball book, working on the Sword and Sorcery anthology, and finally writing the Robots and Monsters novel that I've been working on for 2 years. I just can't ever have time. Can't ever have time, man. I need time. So, any other thoughts about the basketball team? This all has me very excited. I feel like this is all good stuff.
It is exciting, and it is good stuff. And, you know, I think Auburn's in a great place. We're going to have a very talented team again. The SEC's not getting any easier, but we're clearly going to be in competition again. So I feel good about it.
Yeah. All right. Football. I've heard of it. The transfer portal deadline. We talked briefly about this last week, I think, fall.
The deadline was May 1st to enter the portal to play this fall in football or basketball, I believe. And so if you're in the portal, you're good. If you're not in the portal, you know, then you're going to have to – I don't even think they do the waiver thing anymore. But so you basically couldn't play this fall if you transferred now. But there's a lot of guys who are in the portal, hundreds of players, who are now available. And so I think one of the things that Auburn was doing, I think honestly, was kind of playing a numbers game. Oh, there it is.
Just give you a little portal background. Go ahead.
I think Auburn didn't want to bring in like a portal receiver, for example, before this deadline. Because if they did, it might encourage somebody who's on the roster to go, oh, well, I just got bumped down a spot. I'm going to leave. Mm-hmm. So I think they wanted to wait till this deadline was passed and then go out and get a receiver, maybe a safety, maybe an edge rusher, and go try and find those guys in the portal and bring them in over the next few weeks. I think that's going to happen. I think we're going to see some.
But it had to be somebody that's already in it now, right? And they can.
Yes, that's right. Okay. But there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of players in the transfer portal. There are way more players than there are spots.
Wow.
So you can be a little bit picky and try to find somebody that can help you. I think there are going to be players who have to go to 1AA schools or smaller schools or who don't get a scholarship either.
Wow.
So
it's crazy.
It's a moving chair situation. So yeah. Musical chairs, I meant. So.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll be the first to admit that I don't fully understand how the portal thing even works. It feels like about 2 years ago, it just suddenly appeared in the middle of all the COVID stuff. And we all just kind of take for granted that we understand what it is. And I'm just like, I guess I understand, but I don't really understand. So, but I think the way you just laid it out, though, as far as like you, once you declare that you are in it, then you're available even past the deadline. The only thing, other thing I know is that Dr. Pepper has something to do with it. I know that, right? I know it has something to do with Fansville. I think that's part of it. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's part of it. So you had
said something this week about there was an article on ESPN.com about Brian Harsin overcoming adversity, and you had some thoughts about that.
Well, just in the sense of, because several people said it much better than me on Twitter when I kind of retweeted that article, that I won't claim any of this. I'll just pass it on as something to think about. You can agree or disagree, you or the audience, but they basically said, you know, if he wants to move on and not deal with it anymore, why is he bringing it up to you? I guess they probably asked him, but he could have said, we've moved on, you know, he could say a bunch of things, but instead he goes in and says, it's bull bleep, you know, it's BS and it's this and that. And, he had a lot to say. I mean, you know him, Harsin has a lot to say about anything. He kind of goes on for a while. He's not Terry Bowden, but he's not far away from it, honestly. And so he had quite a lot to say about it. But I did think that one thing he said that was kind of funny. They asked him if he had held on to the lead in the Iron Bowl and won it, would any of that have happened? And he smiled and said, "Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question." So
the answer is no.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I get it. We went through this craziness in February, but yeah. The other side I would say is that he's going through the adversity that any Auburn coach who went 6-7 and blew a 10-0 late fourth quarter lead to Alabama would go through.
That's fair enough, for sure. Yeah. But it was funny because several people were saying, just leave him alone and let him coach and whatever. And I'm like, he didn't have to. He said these things. I mean, it's not like, you know, he answered. He could have said no comment, or he could have said, yeah, we're moving on.
He could have said, I don't want to do the interview right now.
Yeah, sure, of course. So, but anyway, all right, so part of the stuff that people are not happy about, and of course there's the usual argument about whose fault is it, and I have a feeling that 20 years from now there'll still be people blaming Gus for things, but I think it's still fair to blame him for some of this, was the NFL draft. And we know that Roger McCreary went in the second round to the Titans, and we didn't get another single player drafted. Now, here's what actually surprised me. My immediate response was, why are we all getting up in arms about having just one player drafted when it seems like most years we get like one or two drafted, not more than that? But I went back and looked, and we really do kind of average three or four a year. I was actually surprised that, you know, some years, you know, obviously there's been big years like 89 after the 88, 87, 88 team and all that, but I was actually surprised that we've done better in the draft than I remembered. We haven't done as well as we probably should based on the talent we've been allegedly bringing in. And that's a whole other, we've talked about that before, what happens to our great players that we bring in and they just don't ever seem to develop or produce. But I mean, we've actually had some, one is unusual.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think the concern is that we were doing more normal, and I think the people are concerned there's a drop off, right?
Yeah.
So in the last 5 years, we're actually 12th among schools in terms of NFL draft picks produced, two behind Clemson, one ahead of A&M.
Wow.
You know, so we're kind of right there with a bunch of other schools, like in the same range as Clemson, Washington, A&M, Miami, Wisconsin. So, you know, in the low 20s. So I think that's over 5 years, that's like four guys a year. Five guys a year. But one guy this year means we had some 6 or 7 years some other years. So I think that's the biggest thing, is that we can't continue to only have one guy a year or we're going to have big problems. The other thing is, I think part of it is there were guys who could have left and gone pro and came back, and the guys that would have gotten drafted, but they came back.
That's not a bad thing.
No, I think that's a good thing. So yeah. I think, you know, Colby Wooden falls into that bucket to me, and probably the edge rusher falls into that. So I think that's the kind of thing that matters, but it's still one and it's not good. So,
well, Mike McClendon, who was quoted fairly extensively in We Believed Volume 1, our book about the first half of our modern Auburn football history, He had this to say. He said, we finished number 13 in the SEC. He originally had us 14. Then he realized that Vanderbilt didn't show up at all because they had no one drafted, and so we're actually 13 and not 14. So, yay, we moved up a spot. He says, this should tell us a lot about where the football program actually is. In the past decade, we have had five offensive linemen drafted into the NFL in total. in the last decade, and one of those was a grad transfer. In the entire Gus Malzahn era, the vast majority of the players drafted from Auburn were defensive players, and that says a lot, I think, especially considering he was an offensive-minded coach and yet couldn't seem to put players in the NFL from offense. So,
no, it's fair. I think, again, we've had way more defensive players drafted over the last 5-10 years than offensive players, and I think it's something we have to get better at. I think part of it was his scheme. The complaint was did not prepare players to the NFL.
Right.
But that's not the case anymore, so you shouldn't see that. I also think we've had a lot of transfers out of good players on the offensive side of the ball, and I think that's hurt us. So.
Well, and plus, didn't Seth and Schwartz both leave early?
Mm-hmm.
And
Schwartz is playing in the NFL. But, you know, you're right. They could have stayed and maybe been higher draft picks too. So,
and Sal Cannella playing in the USFL, tearing it up. Looking good for the New Orleans Breakers. I watched him yesterday.
Got the hair going.
Or Saturday. Yeah. Dominating. He's a great pass catcher for the Breakers, so I was glad to see him out there. He's like the only player that in the entire USFL I recognize. He's like,
wow.
The only one. I really did think. In fact, since I brought it up, I'm going to go ahead and do this now. Hold on.
This is the USFL report.
Birmingham beat New Orleans and is the only undefeated team left.
This has been the USFL report.
Oh, they got me. Firing off that cannon, man. Where'd that come from? They're firing cannons at me in the middle of that thing. Dang. So I know you've been waiting breathlessly for your USFL report. That'll be our new regular feature there. It doesn't take up too much of your time, right? Kind of get in, get out, get the pertinent information. But yeah, Birmingham in a fantastic football game, regardless of the league and the teams and whatever. It was one of those evenly matched. It was clearly the two best teams in the league, and they were in a slugfest. There was a good crowd in the stadium for, you know, because it was Birmingham, and they went back and forth for like 3 hours, and I enjoyed every bit of it. And Birmingham came down to the end, scored, and won, and then was able to get an interception to stop New Orleans from coming back the other way at the end. It was a really good football game, and it was fun, and I'm really enjoying the USFL, so I hope people, and as I keep saying, it's part of the NFL. It's like a minor league now, so it's totally different from the old one. You know, if you thought the old one failed, so this one's going to fail, that's not. They just used the name, and they got the logos, you know, the team names and logos, because those are kind of cool. But it's like a minor league for the NFL, and it's like if you like minor league baseball, going and watching, you know, the Carbondale apple trees versus the, you know, whatever, Marion Miners, then it's fun.
The Richmond Flying Squirrels.
There you go. Heck yeah, man. What's the one in Chattanooga or whatever?
Those Trash Pandas is what I'm thinking about, probably.
Well, there's one, though, that was like the something somethings, I don't know, I'll think of it. But it was really good. It was a really good one. But anyway, all right. Baseball. We beat Tennessee. I didn't know Tennessee. I kept seeing people talking about beating Tennessee, and I'm like, okay, we beat Tennessee. Whoop-de-doo. We beat Tennessee at sports all the time. What's the big deal? Apparently, they were number one.
They're really good at baseball now. They haven't won, again.
Had no idea.
They're kind of the nouveau riche of college baseball, I'm going to say that. Like, they're
I never heard of them being any good at it.
That's what I'm saying. They haven't won anything. They've won one regional. They haven't won the World Series or anything. But they're all fired up, and their crowd's really into it. And they talk a lot of crud.
Yeah.
So going into their stadium and beating them was big. We beat them once, and the other two games were both down to the wire, kind of last inning. Tennessee got a hit and won it. But we're going to see them again, I think. I'm just going to say that. So.
Yeah.
But Auburn played them better than anybody else has played them all season. And Auburn didn't back down. That was huge.
And apparently they didn't like it very much. They were not happy that we were standing up to them.
No, but they talked a lot of crud.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people were not happy about that.
Well, I'm glad we were able to get that win. I know that we came close to getting them the second time. It was like 5-3 in the third game. So, and that was in Knoxville too, right? So
it was. And then they, again, they got a hit in the eighth or whatever on the third game. So that was. They were all down in the wire and back and forth games, and you know it's big for Auburn to be able to, you know, show they could play that level of team and not be intimidated by going into that environment where the fans are really, really rowdy and you know, make it happen. So it's a good omen for this baseball team.
Oh, I just remembered the name of that baseball team. The Makin' Whoopee.
Oh yeah.
That's awesome. That's really good. That's really good. It's terrible, but it's really good. All right. So we've got a baseball program on the rise, basically, I should understand.
Right? I think we do. I think we're back heading in the right direction. It's exciting.
That is good. That's great. All right. Now, we've got a topic to talk about here. Its own little segment, and that is name, image, and likeness, the dreaded NIL. And you have a few things to say about it, and we can talk about it. So kick it off, sir.
Yeah, so we talked about this last year when NIL came out and kind of laid the groundwork for how we got here with the court decisions and the background legal basis. But I think the world has moved a lot in this space in the last year. And so I think I wanted to just regroup about it and talk about how we feel about these things, because it's going to come for Auburn. In, you know, there already is NIL in Auburn, but some of these effects are going to come for Auburn and Auburn players. And I want us to think through this a little bit before one of these things happens to us that we have to react in real time. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I want us to just think about this as a group and talk about it. And so as a refresher, again, until a few years ago, college athletes were not able to make money on their name, image, and likeness. And there was still not any kind of pay for play in college football. You cannot pay college football players. And NIL is not the schools paying college football players. It is not.
No.
It is the college football players profiting from their own name, image, and likeness, which they are allowed to do under the law in the United States of America. So in the pre-NIL era, the only way college athletes could be induced to come to school was the old school bag of cash under the table kind of transaction. Okay, that's how you got players coming to school. You had a network of bagmen, and we in this podcast are realist about this, and we want players get what you can get, and it's fine that they that this existed. This is how it went. We're not going to pretend that college football was some, especially in the SEC, was some pristine sport where this wasn't happening. Okay, so then these court rulings happened, and the early NIL era last year kind of happened. And what we talked about was kind of like the Bo Nix signs a deal with Milo's and endorses their sweet tea, right?
Here's $100 bucks. Yeah.
In his case, several thousand dollars, I'm sure, to endorse Milo's sweet tea. But I think that's kind of where we thought it was going to go, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, somebody like Suni Lee can make a ton of money in endorsements. There were one of the other gymnasts was making leotards and selling them and all that, and endorsing them and that kind of stuff. So there was a bunch of that kind of stuff, right? But I think already what the data is showing is that market is going down, is that the return isn't as good as people thought it was, and that's not where the money's going. Okay. Right. So that kind of influencer advertising market is going away. So what the other thing that's happened is fans of schools have created what they call name, image, and likeness collectives. And so these are basically like for-profit corporations.
I needed a clip from Star Trek with the Borg collective now that I think about it, if I'd realized where this was going. The collective is coming for you, John.
You could go find that one and get it, because you will be assimilated.
Yes. Yes, that's the word I was looking for. There it is. Ding, 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 ding.
So the way the collectives work is it's a bunch of people get together. They basically form a legal, like a for-profit corporation. It's not a charity. And they donate money. And then those organizations sign an agreement with student athletes. Doesn't have to be football. It could be any sport. Mm-hmm. And basically say, we'll play the role of agent and connect you with advertisers and guarantee you a certain amount of money. Because the other piece of the kind of the basic NIL thing that we talked about last year is the players have to do the hustle. They have to do the legwork to find the advertisers, connect with them, review the have somebody help them review the agreements, assign that stuff. And these people are saying, no, you don't have to do anything except cash the check and occasionally show up and endorse something.
There you go.
Sign some autographs or something, right? Or retweet something. That's the deal. And the way the collectives work and the basic ones, some of the basic ones around the country are some people on a message board said, let's do this. And they started one and they're giving, you know, they everybody's like Venmoing money and they're, you know, passing it out to players. That's the basic level. There's those are a bunch of those out there. Okay.
What a world. What a crazy then world we live in now.
Then you got the higher end ones where you got sophisticated people involved. You got attorneys writing the corporate articles and the agreements that the student athletes review and stuff. And then you got people putting millions of dollars into those, and they have professional corporations or like professional agents basically running those and funneling money to players. And that's where we are now. These big collectives are funneling millions and millions of dollars to student athletes, recruits, and players. Okay. So, but I want to, and there is an NIL organization. There are some schools, there are multiple NIL organizations. This is a whole other thing. Again, they're not affiliated directly with the school.
So they could be as many as they wanted to have. Yeah.
Well, but also they could, how do you coordinate? This is a whole other thing. How do the coaches coordinate with those people to tell them, this is the recruit we actually want?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you don't. They don't know who to talk to, who to offer the money to.
Again, they knew who to talk to with the bag men. It's the same thing. The word gets around. Here's our top guys, and help us get that guy, right?
Mm.
So without violating the rules, but help us deliver the bag to get that guy. So there's there's an organization called NIL Auburn. You've probably seen some of their social media stuff. You can look them up online. They're out there, and they're connecting with a bunch of Auburn players and helping them. So I'm going to throw some scenarios at you that have happened in the last month and just get your reaction, okay?
Okay.
And talk about kind of how we feel about this. So the first one is a story that came out in The Athletic about a month ago about a big-time quarterback recruit who has not signed with a school yet, but who an NIL collective reached out to and said, if you sign with this school and stay there all 4 years, we will guarantee you at least $8 million, or up to $8 million. So that is a lot of money for a recruit. Again, I think...
I didn't sneeze at that. I just sneezed, but... It was good timing because that's nothing to sneeze at. But no, I mean, good gosh. So they just told him, if you happen to come to our school, you'd get this $8 million, but go wherever you want, right?
Well, and I think you can't induce them to come to a school. That's a violation.
Okay.
I think it's a... I can't remember how they worded it.
You have to have a specific way to go about it, but there's a way to go about it, right?
Yes, it's basically like, we're committing to you endorsement opportunities if you happen to be a student athlete in the greater Knoxville metro area.
In the next year or two, yeah.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah.
So
we could offer somebody $8 million and they could say, sure, and they go to Southern Union.
Well, but no, they don't get it. It's conditional, see?
Well, like if they're in the Auburn metro area.
Okay, but you have to play for the team and you have to do the endorsement things to get the money.
That's okay. The deal. All right.
But you can't, the way they're constructed, it's not right now an illegal inducement. And nobody's policing this. The NCAA is not coming. The police are not coming. The FBI is not coming. The IRS is not coming. Federal courts are not coming. Nobody's coming to break this up. This is where it is, where it's going. So
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fam.
There you go. And so the NCAA is not walking through that door. And I mean, this is how Texas A&M pulled in this big class, right?
Ding, ding, ding. The rumor is that they have a group. It's called like the Fund, basically. And a bunch of big time money people in there threw in money. And the rumor mill is that they spent, you know, roughly, say, $8 million on signees last year, offering them a deuce. The going rate for a, like, you know, five-star player is $100,000.
I have to look at Texas A&M, and all I can say is,
not for while you can, monkey boy.
I agree. All right, so here's a couple other scenarios, all right? The NIL thing just changed a year ago. So everybody who was in high school benefited from it because they could get the money, you know, as they were coming in and schools were kind of fighting over them. But what about the big time players who already signed, you know, who didn't get these kind of collective NIL deals, these guaranteed income deals? They feel kind of left out. Now, some of them have endorsement opportunities and stuff, but they're not getting this kind of guaranteed money per year that these other players are getting. And so we've seen a couple examples of this in the last week. One is the guy who killed us in the NCAA tournament, Isaiah Wong of Miami.
Mm-hmm.
They had a recruit. They signed a recruit away from Kansas State, and he got, you know, it was publicly announced that guy got like, the guy from Kansas State that went to Miami got like $400,000 a year or something, or $400,000. And Isaiah Wong wasn't getting that much. And he said, I'm transferring unless I get more.
Now they're going to be holding their own teams hostage.
Ding, ding, ding.
Holding them hostage.
So then at first they said, we're not renegotiating. And then they did renegotiate and hooked him up with some more endorsement opportunities. And now he's staying.
Wow.
So here's the other one. The returning Biletnikoff winner as the best wide receiver in college football is named Jordan Addison. He played at Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett last year. This weekend, the news broke that he is contemplating transferring to Southern Cal.
Ah, and where the trees are green and so's the money.
Where the money is deep and green. Wow. And they said, you know, we could get you a lot more endorsement opportunities out here. And for a guy of your talent. And so the word tampering has been thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
By the Pitt coaching staff. I don't think it's tampering.
But this is all going to have to be litigated eventually. In other words, for years we fought the battle of whether or not they can get anything.
What?
And that battle's been settled. They can get. Now we're going to have to fight the battle of how does it all work? Because this is all stuff that in general could be predicted was coming, but we had to see it specifically play out to really get a sense of how it would happen, you know. And now we're seeing.
That's fair. But here's the other thing. Again, we fought this battle. This isn't we're not paying players to play college sports. This is name, image, and likeness. We're getting around the rules.
Right.
If we treated college players as employees and paid them to play the sports based on the hundreds of millions of dollars that these sports generate, then we wouldn't deal with this kind of stuff. It would be cleaner. But we're not doing that. The NCAA fought against this for all this time, and they could have set up some better systems and cleaner processes, but they just stuck their fingers in the dike over the years, and then it broke, and they got washed away, and now it's open season out there. And this is where we are, and I understand a lot of people don't like this. I get it if you're shaking your head listening to this, but it's not all terrible. Here's another example I think it's definitely going to see coming in future years, maybe for Auburn, and that is encouraging a player to stay instead of going pro. So Oscar Tshiebwe of Kentucky basketball was going to be a late first-round draft pick. They piled up the NIL money, and he's going to make about $2 million this year from NIL, which is more than he would have made as a late first-round draft pick, so he's staying at Kentucky.
Kentucky has a bigger payroll than a lot of NBA teams. Probably most of them. That's the thing.
So
that's the thing. So does Texas A&M.
That's
what we're heading toward. That's what we're heading toward is that colleges have such fanatical fan bases, more than pro teams to a large degree, and football and to a degree basketball. And if the money is there, then it's just going to be the next thing that's expected, just like you're expected to build nice facilities. You're expected to, you know, recruit a certain way. You're expected to play a certain schedule. And now you're going to be expected to pay your best players, not to play, like you said, but to have the nice deal for them while they're there in your program.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
And that's where it's going.
That's exactly where it's going. And I think there are a lot of, like you're saying, wealthy people who are big-time fanatics of college athletics who were, you know, they would probably – you know, the kind of people who are more upright people who would never be like, oh, I'm giving a bag full of cash to some guy to go hand to recruit. But if you set up some corporation and they could, you know, transfer some money there to help support the team, yeah, we'll do that. So there's a lot of business people who are like, yeah, I can do this. I can help support this. And they're making it happen. And it's a way, to, like you're saying, to directly support their team and make a difference. And I think this is the question is like, how do we feel about this? Like, is this going to change the balance of power, or is it just going to be the same schools with the same, you know, getting the same recruits? I kind of think it's that. I think it's going to be Alabama and Ohio State.
I think it simply provides another way for some of the have-nots to become haves, and maybe for the opposite. In other words, I think a lot of them will stay the same, just using different means than they've been using. But this gives the opportunity, like, you know, for example, let's just say Illinois in football. Illinois in football should have the resources to be a competitive team, right? They're a Big Ten team in a big state with money, with players in the area in Chicago and St. Louis, you know, nearby and everything. They ought to be a good program. And if this just gives them another tool to wedge themselves into the conversation that maybe they wouldn't have had before. That's how I see it.
That's fair. And again, I don't think we're going to see some program come out of nowhere and be a superpower.
Right. The SMU.
But it can make you competitive.
SMU wishes that this was the way it had been back in the early 80s, man. They'd have had national championships left and right.
They did. They had a good tweet recently where they had them with the Trans Am. That was really good.
Oh yeah, I just gonna say they pioneered name, image, and likeness 40 years ago at Texas A&M, at SMU.
I think Miami is one school that's really kind of gotten their stuff together that is using this to get players in football.
Yeah,
I think it's gonna make a difference there, but I think a lot of their places it's not gonna matter.
Yeah, no, I get that. But like certainly some school like Texas A&M can parlay it as a boost, you know what I mean? Because they have the means that they can do more if they're allowed to, and this is like allowing them to.
Yes. They kind of got in their own way before, but this allows – they have money, and this allows them to use their money as a lever to
without getting on probation. Without necessarily exactly. Getting on probation, yeah.
That's right. So but then when we get into the real question about this, I wanted to throw this out there about – if it was like pay for play and you had a budget or whatever, but the budget included both the coaching staff and the roster, what is the value of a great player versus a great coach? Like what is, I mean, again, what is the value of Cam Newton or Nick Marshall versus Malzahn?
I don't have the slightest idea where to go with that. I see what you're saying, but I mean, how can you compare? It's like, I don't know. You want to keep the coach you think is great, but not many of those are around, you know. You certainly can tell when a player is great, and you're going to do everything you can to keep him. But I don't know if it's apples and oranges beyond that. I'm not sure. Do you have a view about that? I'm not sure.
I mean, I just think it's something to think about, right? Like, because we can pay coaches, whatever, the coach's salaries have escalated. And we saw – this is the other thing. I think people get upset about these players jumping, but we saw the Oklahoma coach go to Southern Cal. We saw the Notre Dame coach go to LSU and stuff. And we saw the other coaches leave. So, you know, we saw the Oregon coach go to Miami. Don't say to the players, you signed here, you have to stay here all 4 years. They got big money to go somewhere else. What's the difference? If you're going to offer them big money to jump, what's the difference between offering the players big money to jump? I mean, to me, I don't think it's a big difference. So
yeah. So it's really just shaking up the sport all over again, and as seems to happen every few years in one way or another, and we won't know until we see it play out and unfold.
That's right. But it's like you said earlier, like it's like the transfer portal was a brand new thing, and we're just getting used to that, and it's that plus this – plus these other things that have come along that have really kind of, it seems like a different planet than it did, you know, 2 or 3 years ago when we were on this podcast. So
it absolutely does. Different sport. Yeah. All right. Well, that's good. I mean, I welcome the thoughts of our listeners.
Yes.
At the usual avenues, so we can maybe have some good questions and comments about this for next week's show at auwishbone@gmail.com or at JK Ringer at AU Wishbone, either one. We did get a new couple of sound clips. You already heard my all-time favorite from Buckaroo Banzai.
Clap for while you can, the monkey boy.
I'm going to use that in any possible way I can over the foreseeable future. But we also received this one from one of our listeners, and I thought it certainly was apt for tonight.
What is your name? John Ringer? What kind of a name is Ringer?
Well, I'm adopted. I spent most of my life in institutions.
Doesn't surprise me. You look like a typical low-life character to me.
That's from Stripes.
Yes.
And I know that because it's a famous scene. This is before they enter the army. And that's, it's not John Belushi. It's Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd, right?
No, it's Stripes. That's Bill Murray.
It's Bill Murray. And Bill Murray is that character. His name is John Winger. And he's in a cab, and the woman, he's driving crazily, and the woman is like, "What is your name? John Ringer?"
You had to flip out when you heard that.
I did. It was great.
I mean, that's right up there with Star Trek IV when they say Plexicorp is where they get their plexiglass for the whales, you know, in the whale tank on the ship. And I was in the theater going, So, yeah, I hear you, man. So his actual name was Winger, so he could have been in the band Winger. That's pretty cool. The band made famous by the little kid on Beavis and Butthead that wore the Winger t-shirt when they had like the death metal and AC/DC shirts, and he had the Winger shirt on. That's great. But we also have, here's just a little preview. I've got these more than one coming up this fall, but this is just the one time, all right? This is the one time I'm going to play this, just so you'll know what's coming up this fall.
It's Mercer Bears Hate Week 2022.
Got a little flavor added in there, huh?
What was the original?
Originally, it was like the 2019 Georgia State. It was somebody.
That
I just deleted
that.
It. Yeah, I just deleted it. It was somebody. Liberty. It started out with Liberty. It was Liberty Hate Week.
Hate Week, that's right.
Yes, it was Liberty. But when you hear a sound effect that's got bells gonging and screams and Howard Dean and explosions, I thought the one thing it really needed was more.
So
now it's got an alarm at the end too. So yeah,
more.
So now you'll know that it's the 2022 version because it's got that klaxon at the end. But there you go. I won't play that again. I'll save it. I'll keep it fresh.
I was gonna say he won't play it again yet.
I'll keep it fresh until the first week of the season when it will become Mercer Bears Hate Week. And, you know, we usually only do these for the little tiny teams that we play, the Cupcakes, because that's why it's funny. It would be, you know, if we did LSU Hate Week or Alabama Hate Week, it'd be like, well, yeah, no kidding. But I actually did one for Penn State because we actually have some hate for Penn State now, and I felt like I needed to express it on the air. So there will be one for Penn State, too. Let's see. In other news, I think...
Quick football position review.
Yes, I was going to say, we've got our position review to continue. That's right.
And it's going to be a shorter one this week because we're just doing special team.
Yeah.
And we're not worried about snappers, even though that position matters, so.
Eh. Snapper Carr, not the greatest person in the Justice League. That's fine. Rick Jones is better.
So we have the bookstore, Anders Carlson, is back.
Yes. One more year.
One more year. And, you know, it was good last year, but not great. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in 2020... he made 20 of 22 field goals, and last year he made 14 of 21. He had injured, none of that mattered, but definitely needs to come back strong and have a good year.
Well, remember, he struggled a little bit in 19. Yeah. He was really good in the Iron Bowl, but remember, we were not totally confident in him going into the Iron Bowl. He had struggled a little bit.
Because he was, what, 4-for-4 in the Iron Bowl?
I think so, but before that, he had been kind of like up and down all year.
Before the Iron Bowl, he was like, 14 of 21 or something. So,
yeah.
Yeah, not great. But I he has the ability to have a dominating senior season and be an All-America kind of kicker and be a real weapon for us.
Yeah.
So I think that can really matter.
Certainly hope so. Not talking about speaking of weapons for us, our punter.
Yeah. You know, we've been through it with punters a little bit. Oscar Chapman, he's good. I mean, I think he's pretty good. He's back. You know, we had Aaron Sipos. We had, you know, Bo Nix do a little punting. But I think Sipos is pretty – I mean, I think Oscar Chapman is pretty good.
Yeah, he had a good year.
I think he's effective. I think he does a lot of punting, you know, pinning the other team back. So I feel pretty good about that.
Heck yeah.
And I think, like, he was second in the conference in average last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he got, you know, maybe I'd like for him to have a little less work.
Yeah.
But,
well, we always used to say that Vanderbilt always used to have the all-SEC punter because they got the most practice.
But you're joking, but I'm looking at the punting stats from last year. Vanderbilt's punter had 73 punts, okay? Like,
yeah.
Everybody else is in the 50s.
Yeah, exactly. They get so much more work. They have more chances to – that. Back in the 80s and 90s, I remember they always had the all-SEC punter other than a couple of years because, yeah, they just get a lot of work. So, and they're usually punting from their own 20-yard line too, so they have, you know, plenty of leeway. They're not punting from, like, your 40, you know. They're on their own 20. What about returners? Javarius Johnson, he's the one that's coming back, right? That was going to leave but decided not to.
Yeah, he was in the portal but took his name out, so he's back. Again, I think more of a punt returner with him probably, but there could also be some of these other new players who could be punt returner tryouts. And then at kickoff returner, we had Jarquez Hunter and Nehemiah Pritchett, and I think they were both pretty good, but it's also possible that some of these new players step in and that's always a good job for a new, you know, receiver running back to try kickoff returner. But I think they could make a difference there. So, you know, none of them were awesome world beaters, but I think they could help. And I think Pritchett in particular was pretty effective at times when he had the ball doing that. So
I'm going to need Jarquez Hunter to show me something this year and not in the Mercer game. I need him to show me he's an actual SEC all-around back because he was really, really good in the early part of the season when we were playing the weaker teams. But when it came down to facing real SEC defenses, he was not super effective later in the year. Of course, he's banged up a little bit too, to be fair. Yeah, so
that's fair.
So we'll see. I'm certainly rooting for him. I don't want to get – don't get me wrong. I'm rooting for him 100%, but I need him to show me that he, you know, he can do it.
I agree. We got Demario also coming in, but he does because, again, Tank is probably going to go pro after this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we need somebody to show us they can be an SEC back next year.
Yeah, absolutely. We got Alex McPherson, the number one kicker, coming in. We continue to just bring in the great kickers. I don't know how we do it, but I sure am glad we do. So I feel pretty good about the kicking situation overall, right?
Yeah,
I should.
Again, compared to a lot of other positions on the roster, I have no concerns about this area at all.
Yeah. So special teams should be a strength.
It should be. And we got a lot of good young signees at linebacker, at defensive back, and those kind of guys should be good coverage guys. So I think this should be a team strength. I agree.
If we can just put an offense that's better than what we had out most of last season, particularly the second half of the season, we could be a halfway decent team. But we'll have to see. So what's up next?
I think we'll do defensive line next. We'll jump over the defensive side of the ball, talk about defensive line.
There's plenty to talk about there. All right, we have to thank our patrons for continuing to stand up strong for this show and keep it going. Remember, we desperately need your support to continue doing this. John and I work hard every week on this show, putting stuff together and then recording it and then doing all the posting and the advertising and everything. And we hope that you all enjoy it. And if you do, be sure to go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button to become a patron. And it also lets you into all the various things that we do year round that only the patrons get to do. And in this case, you'll even get early access to our new basketball book that's coming out soon. The entire history of Auburn basketball going back to 1978. And with brand new interview that you guys might have heard before here, but brand new for the book, interview with Sonny Smith and other features that are coming along. We're currently doing the Fantasy Formula One League, but there was not a race this weekend, so I do not have an update there. although I need another race soon because I need to catch back up. I climbed up to fifth last I checked. Do please go to www.auwishbone.com. We don't do ads. Instead, we have to thank the following folks who make that so that we don't. And that includes, and I'm having to rejigger my screen here. That includes Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kanzian, Ben Bloodworth, Bruce Isn't Harsin' Around. Can we listen to some RoboGus reruns during the off-season, ? We'll have to ask Jared. It can only be Jared. If he wants to throw some kind of like a greatest hits together for us, that might be fun. Chris Hilton.
Please clap.
Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, David Hegler, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, who I believe, John, just had a little young'un, did they not?
Yep. Congratulations to them. Very happy.
Yeah, we love them so much. They're awesome. Oh, by the way, so if you don't know, you can become a patron, and if you're already a patron, either one, you can put whatever you like into the name field there, and that's what I read. So you can make me read things that are entertaining or ask for various sound effects, as people, as you're about to see, people will do, and one already did. John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Old Mrs. Miracle Medical Staff, Algo Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Phil Davis.
Like an unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
Rich Reimer, Rusty Owen, Sarah Brown, Steve Harlan. Thank goodness for Wynn Carroll, because
Larry Berg's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
See, there's your creative use of the name there. Oh no. The insulation is not yet installed.
You have failed me for the last time.
They're getting so creative. You're right, it is not, but we'll get to that as soon as we're able to, I promise. Theodore Gary, War Eagle Always, Warhammer 6, I love it. WDE Richie.
Just two little country kids outside misbehaving.
It's awesome. It's like this is like put in your requests for the soundboard. This is their chance to play the sound. These folks are getting to play the soundboard as their contribution. It's great. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, a retired Kim E. in Galveston, AU Wishbone Bracket Challenge Champion Patrick Williams. That's right, Patrick. You tell him. Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, our Bowl Pick'em Champion, Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Dibama, Helpo, here's the other half of helping Van upgrade his insulation, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle 87. Mark always lets me insert my favorite soundboard audio. So for this week, I think we will go with...
And one can't go to pieces at the death of every foreigner. We'd all be in a state of collapse whenever we opened a newspaper.
That's right. I love it. I love it. Love it. I've seen her recently watching... We've been watching the Harry Potter movies, and she's like she's McGonagall on there. AJ Herman, insert soundbite. I'm a man, I'm 40, and he sent it to me, and I don't know what I did with it. I had all these sound effects that I'm juggling, and I don't know what I did with that one, dang it, and I'm sorry, but I will get it. But he basically says, I'm a man, I'm 40. There you go. So, and that's the Oklahoma State coach, I believe. Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brian Albanese, C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, and finally, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, Elizabeth Donald,
We got to get better at celebrating.
I want early access to the basketball book. Well, that's excellent. That's what we want to hear. Is We Believed a good gift for an anniversary or Mother's Day? And I believe we answered last week. Yes, it is. I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrick, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schenker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains.
Someone knows. God knows.
A.K.A. Auburn Dead for Life. Loving Auburn means you have to
smoke weed every day.
I didn't know that that was true, but apparently it is. Mark Squire, MVP Captivating Kathy Bright, Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland. Spanky, having trouble with my bracket.
Someone knows. God knows.
That one's a very popular clip this week. Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis. All right. Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family. This name is brought to you by Bubba's Discount Tire and Tax Services. I did find our barbecue and foot massage sound clips. Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. And now we have a Guess the Game. Are you ready for Guess the Game?
Bring it on.
And this is Guess the Game number 50.
Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 50. All right, let's get straight to it this time. Here is your sound clip for Guess the Game 50.
He's out to the far side. Lines up against this time in the backfield. And they're just going to flood it. Oh, he's not going to get the chance. Ball is loose. And Auburn recovers. Got whacked. And Auburn fell on it at the 13, maybe the 12-yard line. Coming up huge. Put the blast on. And recovered the fumble. And it sat there for seconds and seconds. And comes up with a huge turnover with 54 seconds to go in the half.
Mm-hmm. Interesting indeed. I will see you in the hint file.
I think I know for one reason.
All right, go.
Because it sat there for a while. I think I know what it is because he said it sat there for seconds and seconds. That's my clue. Do you have any idea? What are you thinking?
No, I was just going to start with the announcers were...
Rod Bramblett, Stan White. That's,
right, so that means the time period is...
2003 through 2018.
Okay.
Scares me. I can throw that out that fast.
Sounded like it was a home game.
I think it was an away game.
Okay. It was in the first half, late in the first half, and it looked like the other team maybe was moving to score.
Mm-hmm.
And Auburn defensive lineman maybe disrupted the play.
Mm-hmm.
And caused the ball to come loose
and lay there for seconds.
Auburn recovered.
I want you to visualize the ball on the ground and the defensive lineman who knocked it away from the quarterback crawling on his hands and knees around the quarterback to jump on it or to cover it.
Okay. I'm remembering this when you say it.
Mm-hmm.
Was this a Derek Brown thing?
No. Earlier.
Okay.
Although it certainly sounds like a Derek Brown thing, but... The other defensive lineman that's been as disruptive as Derek Brown in the last 20 years.
Was this a 2010 comeback at Alabama thing?
I think it was. I think that was fairly.
Okay.
Remember when he stripped the ball loose, it went on the ground, and then he went all the way around the quarterback and the offensive lineman and jumped on it?
Mm-hmm.
One of those several miracle plays that kept us in the game in the first half?
I do remember that. So I like that call. That's a good call. It's tough because it's a defensive play.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of that that's tough. I can't remember another play that matches those criteria of being the other team is driving, they're down deep in our red zone, and the ball just lays there for seconds, as Stan said.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's hear the hints, and I think we're going to end up being right.
Here we are in the hint file. Let's get rid of those bleeps and get rid of all the mystery and give it a listen.
Is out to the far side to Charvin Bell, lines up against Jones. This time Ingram in the backfield. And they're just going to flood. Oh, he's not going to get the chance. Ball is loose. And Auburn recovers. McElroy got whacked. And Auburn fell on it at the 13, maybe the 12-yard line.
Nick Fairley coming up huge. Put the blast on McElroy and recovered the fumble. And it sat there for seconds and seconds. And Nick Fairley comes up with a huge turnover with 54 seconds to go in the half.
I bet you got it by now. I'll see you in the answer file.
I think that's it, right?
No, nope. You called it. That was a good one.
All right, here's the answer.
All right, gentlemen, if you guys have figured out that this is the 2010 Iron Bowl, then you are correct. I just wanted to give a little love to the defense this time around because, you know, I've done...
Oh, crap. I'm sorry. Sorry, Jared.
All right, gentlemen, if you guys have figured out that this is the 2010 Iron Bowl...
Yes.
Then you are correct. I just wanted to give a little love to the defense this time around because, you know, I've done a fair amount of Cam Newton plays over these last 50 episodes. And I thought maybe something from the defense would be fun. So You probably got it, but I want to give the defense their nod. And as usual, if any listeners out there have a idea for Guess the Game, you can contact me on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at YardSaleArtist. Or you can email me directly at Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. And until next time, Van, John, happy 50th Guess the Game, and War Eagle.
Yeah, I accidentally hit the kill button on that. Didn't mean to. I was trying to move something around. But yeah, that was great. I appreciate, as we always say, just because... You know, one of us happens to get it quickly through some random clue, you know, is happenstance. But that was a good one. And that was a really good play and a good game. And I like the idea that he did a defensive play. That was good. So,
yeah. Again, I'm team defense here. So I like defensive plays. But I can't believe we've already done 50 Guess the Games.
I would have said 25 at most. It's just hard to imagine.
So I want to give Jared some credit for that because, again, this is something he does to support the show, and I appreciate it.
He does.
So if you have ideas for other good plays, defensive, or we had a refereeing one a couple weeks ago, Send those to Jared.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate that, Jared, as always. And now...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Oh, my God.
All right. What do we got this week?
Here we go. First question from Cato, and the subject line is the softball skeptic checking in.
Oh, yeah. Here we go. We've been following this soap opera.
He replied. So he says, all right, fellas. I've been super negative lately. Been trying to rein that in. And not just say anything about softball, especially since we finally got an SEC series win. But y'all go call me out of the pod like that. I see how it is.
He wants to
dispel once and for all with this fiction.
All right. He says, for this week's podcast, as far as the softball doing well right now, I really don't think we are. Right before the season started, I sent y'all an email where I said this about Coach Dean. We have a coach who feasts on smaller, no-name schools to boost his record and then gets an SEC play and loses the game that matters the most. And so far, it's exactly where we're at. He has an overall record of 36-10, which is pretty dang good. But once you start parsing that record, it quickly becomes obvious that it's very inflated with scrubs, St. John's, Seton Hall, UMass, Lowell, North Carolina A&T, UT Chattanooga, Niagara, Bradley, Delaware State, Alabama State, Toledo, 18-0. Eats those teams for breakfast, but then we get into the SEC. We are 9-9 in conference games right now, which isn't great to begin with, but then you look at who those 9 wins are against. We played the 3 worst teams in the SEC, South Carolina, A&M, Mississippi State, and went 7-2, which is fine, exactly what we should be doing. But that means we're 2-7 against the rest of the SEC, Arkansas, Florida, Kentucky. We're 3-8 against ranked teams. For our remaining games, we're home against number 4 Georgia, or 4th ranked in the SEC Georgia, and away against 3rd ranked Tennessee in the SEC. Going 1-5 is a real possibility in those games. This weekend against Georgia is going to tell us a lot. And again, he wrote this heading into last weekend. If I were smart, I'd wait until Sunday to send this, but oh well. As for the record, I hope I'm wrong. I would love for Mickey Dean to make me eat every last word, but we just do not have it against teams with a pulse. I have a terrible feeling we're going to see exactly what we saw last year, an early SEC tournament exit, followed by going home pretty quickly in a regional. Prove me wrong, Mickey Dean. Thanks, Cato, the softball skeptic.
No, it's hard to refute. I mean, when you break it down like that, that's legit, you know, that he's doing well. You know, it's kind of like how our football team did last season, where we were looking really good early on when we were playing, you know, a nice mixture of teams. But when you get into the real meat of it, it's suddenly not so good anymore. So I get that.
I agree. All right, next question. This is from WDE Richie, following up on our last week, our what if question. And he says, what if Russell Wilson had picked Auburn over Wisconsin for the 2011 season? How would that have changed the 2011 season? Mm-hmm. Also, would Gus have stayed for the 2012 season?
Yeah, that was certainly a big what if. I really like this one. I like it because we were in the running for him. It was us or Wisconsin, and he ended up going with Wisconsin. And I don't know why. I don't know that he's ever said why. But it certainly, we dropped down to like 8-5 without that year, I believe.
That's it. And we played Barrett Trotter or Clint Mosley at quarterback.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, not our greatest. I mean, imagine going from Cam Newton to Barrett Trotter Mosley the next year. That's about as dropping off as you can drop off.
It's a great question, because the other thing is, I think the quarterback play would be infinitely better. We'd have won more games in 2011.
Yeah.
And I think the end result of that is, I think Chizik keeps his job, right?
Well, I mean, 12 is still 12, but if we still have Russell Wilson in 12.
Well, I think he was a one-year person. He went to Wisconsin and stayed 1 year.
Yeah.
But I just think the offense would have been more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we went 8-5 in 2011. I think we would have won two or three more games easy. So.
Yeah, we can't really say about Gus, because we know he wanted to be a head coach and the opportunity came and he went. There's some that say he left also because he could see the bad times coming of 12 and didn't want to be around when that happened. And if that's true, that was probably pretty smart. But I think that, I mean, think how much better that team was when they got Nick Marshall. So you put Russell Wilson on in 11, and I think I don't know if they're in the national championship game 12-2 like that team, like the 13 team was, but I think they could have won 10 games.
I agree. And again, really 10 games coming off the national title, we'd have been in the New Year's Day bowl game. It would have been
brilliant,
big time. So
yeah, I think so.
I your scenario about how much better we were with Nick Marshall makes me think my what-if question would be, what if Gus just made better quarterback recruiting decisions instead of going after some other guys, and we got Lamar Jackson, for example?
Oh, you're hurting me.
Can you imagine Lamar Jackson following Nick Marshall in that offense?
In 2015 with Lamar Jackson, throw into those receivers that Marshall had that Jeremy Johnson couldn't connect with. Good gosh. Yeah, better quarterback decisions. We don't get the guy with the bad elbow that I call him the bad elbow guy. We don't get the guy from the TV show that did nothing. Instead, we
John
actually
Franklin the third.
Yeah, actual quarterbacks.
We had Tyler Queen.
God, so, you want to make me sick? Just go through and name our quarterback recruits over the middle to later Gus years. I mean, Stidham was very good. Stidham was very good. Yeah. Other than him, after Nick Marshall,
he was a transfer. He wasn't a high school guy. It was high school decisions.
And then Bo Nix at the end was what he was, which was better than most of them. But other than those two, you go back to Nick Marshall. I mean, golly, just imagine Lamar. I don't know.
All right. We have another good what-if question here. This one's from Bill Miner, who says, guys, I love the what-if suggestion, and there are so many, but here's my question for the debate. Mm-hmm. Was hiring Tony Franklin as the offensive coordinator a good thing? Had he crushed it, would we be in a better spot? I think it's a mixed bag, but a net positive. Things like the 2010 title the Tuberville 10-year Chizik hiring are all directly affected by Tony Franklin being hired as the OC. What are your thoughts?
No, that's true. I mean, that was he came in at the end of 07 and was the offensive coordinator for the first half of 08, and then Tuberville ran him off. He coached the Peach Bowl or the Chick-fil-A Bowl, whatever they were calling it at that time, where we beat Clemson. And then he coached like the first half of the 08 season where our offense was terrible with Cody Burns at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, all these things, I mean, what this points to is that when we have our good moments on the roller coaster, it's usually because we've just had a bad moment and something had to change. So if you do things to make the bad moments not as bad, then you don't get the change. So is it, you know what I mean? It's like you're raising the bottom up a little bit, but you're lowering the top down a little bit. You're making us less of a roller coaster, but without maybe the lows, but without the highs too. I don't know.
I think Tony Frank was important because he got us moving in the direction of going to more of a spread offense, which we did dramatically after that. And I think it made the transition at least a little bit easier for 09 and 10 because we went through what we went through in 8. I think that matched.
That's valid, yeah. That's true. Although I'm still not convinced that Gus ran a spread, but they always said he did, so whatever.
It was a
spread. Remember they used to say it was like it was like Auburn fastest offense in football, and we decided it was like the fifth slowest offense in football. It was just such a joke.
Eventually,
I just never understood that.
So that's it for listener questions this week. Right. If you have other good what if questions,
yeah,
especially like I like those two really good, the Tony Franklin and the Russell Wilson questions. If you have other good ones, throw them at us. We'll be happy to answer them.
Yeah, it was a great idea, and for a little subset of our question and answer session, and it's a nice topic going forward. So heck yeah, it's John and I always enjoy speculating on what ifs and alternate history and stuff like that. Be the hairy turtle dove of Auburn football and basketball, and send us some stuff. So, all right, we've gotten through this one. We actually had quite a few things to talk about this week compared to most of our off-season shows. That's kind of cool. So, any final thoughts before we sign off?
Enjoy the beautiful weather. Get outside, but don't let the pollen get to you. I just get
too late. Too late. God. Yep. I'm going to be at the Windy City Pulp and Paperback Convention in Lombard, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, this coming weekend. I'll be riding up late Friday night after Mira's play. I'm hanging around here to see Mira in a play, and then I'm going to drive up. So I will be there in the big white hotel in the middle of the giant parking lot next to Target. I can't think what it's called right now. It's the it's the one next to Target in the movie theater in Lombard, Illinois. So if you're in the Chicago area, come on out on Saturday or Sunday, and I'll be all set up and visit and buy some books. And otherwise, I guess that's going to do it for this week. So, John, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
Break it, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.